Kutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shrinivare Paschachari Sitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashram Dharma. We are on text 36 today. Shaucham achamanam stanam. Shaucham achamanam snanam. Natu chodanaya charet. Natu chodanaya charet. Angyangs chaniyaman jnani. Angyangs chaniyaman jnani. Yataham lila yeshvara. Yataham lila yeshvara. Shaucham vachamanam snanam. Natu chodanaya charet. Anyangs chaniyaman jnani. Yataham lila yeshvara. Others? Chaucham, general cleanliness. Achamanam, purifying the hands with water. Snanam, taking bath. Na, not. Tu, indeed. Chodanaya, by force. Charet, one should perform. Anyan, other. Cha, also. Niyaman, regular duties. Jnani, one who has realized knowledge of me. Yata, just as. Aham, I. Lilaya, by my own desire. Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Just as I, the Supreme Lord, execute regulative duties by my own free will, similarly, one who has realized knowledge of me should maintain gentle cleanliness, purifying his hands with water, take bath, and execute other regulative duties, not by force, but by his own free will. Report. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends to the material world, he generally observes the Vedic regulative duties to set a proper example for mankind. The Lord acts by his own free will, since no one can oblige, force, or impel the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, the jnani, or self-realized soul, is fixed on the spiritual platform beyond the material body, and should therefore execute the regulative duties in relation to the material body by his own free will, and not as a servant of the rules and regulations. A self-realized soul is a servant of Lord Krishna and not of rules and regulations. Nevertheless, a transcendentalist strictly complies with regular duties for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. In other words, one who is advanced in loving devotional service to Lord Krishna spontaneously moves according to the will of the Supreme. One who is perfectly situated in spiritual realization cannot become a servant of the material body or of rules and regulations concerning the material body. However, this verse and other similar statements in Vedic scriptures should not be ignorantly misinterpreted to justify immoral, whimsical behavior. Lord Krishna is discussing the Paramahamsa stage of life, and those who are attached to the material body have nothing to do with this Paramahamsa stage, nor should they exploit its unique privileges and status. Om Gyanati Brandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurumitamina Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Banchiko Patriubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhepacha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namaha Jai. So, very interesting verse. We've had a number of verses here about Varnashram duties, and the last couple of verses particularly have sort of stressed this theme of balance. That there are regulative duties, and then there's also the position of the spiritually realized person, and how one keeps those things in the proper perspective. And yesterday's verse, the last verse, the very last line of the purport, I thought was a very good one. I imagine Hridayanandabhai was just the author or some of the BBT writers and editors, but I thought this was very good. He says, from these verses, it appears that even a saintly sage must have a good dose of common sense. So I thought that was very instructive. There's a lot of statements in the scriptures that might seem contradictory. And I know a lot of times we get questions in classes, well, what about this? And it says this and over here. You know, but these aren't really contradictions. They're different perspectives. And an intelligent person knows how to understand these different perspectives and see these different juxtapositions of concepts and ideas and how to integrate them, how to synthesize them and understand the balance that, yes, on one hand there's this, on the other hand there's this, depending upon one's particular point of view, from one's particular stage of advancement, and such things as that. So here we have a similar idea in this vein, that one is not the servant of rules and regulations. The rules and regulations pertaining to one's existence in this material world should not define one, should not be one's object, should not be one's main focus, but rather one should be focused upon the service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the same time, and here's the common sense, that you don't throw out all the rules and regulations falsely thinking, I'm on the Paramahamsa stage, I'm a great pure devotee, I'm beyond all of this. No. One does not neglect the regulative principles, particularly the principles of sadhana bhakti. And it's mentioned that if one even is on a higher stage, it says, nevertheless, a transcendentalist strictly complies with regular duties for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. In other words, even if one is at that very advanced stage, a Paramahamsa stage, for the sake of the pleasure of the Lord and setting example, just as Krishna says he sets example for all men to follow, the pure devotee also sets example for the rest of us of how to follow rules and regulations in a very exemplary way. And of course, the spiritual master is called Acharya, one who sets example, one who leads by example, not just by precept, but by one's own action. So If one was taking spiritual instruction from a Paramahamsa who was on a stage of being oblivious to all the rules and regulations, and sometimes we talked before about some of these Avadhuta personalities, it might be difficult for us to understand what we are to do. So fortunately, we have a spiritual master such as Srila Prabhupada, who even though at the most advanced Paramahamsa stage, a pure devotional service beyond any material or mundane considerations of rules and regulations, always acted in the most proper way, acted as the perfect Vaishnava, the perfect gentleman, the perfect human being, and therefore gives example and inspiration for the rest of us. So, of course, we have in the Nectar of Instruction the scriptural prohibition, not prohibition exactly, but the scriptural idea of Niyamagraha. And, of course, in the Nectar Instruction, there are the two meanings of Niyamagraha. This is something to avoid it, to be avoided. We neither blindly follow rules and regulations, it says, simply for the purpose of rules and regulations and not understanding the import behind them, nor do we neglect them. So we don't blindly follow, neither do we neglect the rules and regulations. And so we understand the idea behind them, and that is to always remember Krishna. In all the rules and regulations that are given in scriptures like Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Rupa Goswami enumerates all the rules and practices of Vaidhi Bhakti, right? You have 64 different rules and regulations, different practices, very structured practice. But before he even begins to describe those rules and regulations, he quotes from Padma Purana. Where is it? Here we go. Smartha vyasa tatam vishnor vishmartha vyo najatuchit sarve vidhi vishadhya shor aitayur eva kinkara. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastra should be the servant of these two principles. So here we have the balance. Here we have the common sense that we always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, and therefore we follow the rules and regulations for that purpose. Right? It's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. We hear, we chant, we follow the process of bhakti, the process of sadhana, so we remember Krishna. Of course, that's also a process in itself. And in fact, we could say that the end and the goal is the same. The process and the result of the process are identical. That is the spiritual nature, the absolute nature of bhakti. In the beginning stage, one hears and chants. In the intermediate stage, one hears and chants, hopefully a little better. And in the final stage of life, what does one do? Hears and chants. And we have examples. Shukadeva Goswami was chanting. Maharaj Parikrit was hearing, you know, and so on. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with the stories and the examples of great devotees. We have conversations with Maitreya, with Vidura, with Kapila, with, you know, on down the line, you know, Gardama Muni. It's all hearing and chanting. It's all describing the glories of Krishna and hearing those glories. And these are our acharyas. These are the great devotees in our line. So, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, and also never neglect the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti so that we can get to that point of actually remembering Krishna always. Okay, I think that's one very important point here that's being mentioned and discussed. And there's another point, one that I found very interesting. And this was the mention of free will. Free will is a very interesting and important topic, and I wish I would have had hours to prepare for this to, you know, give a little better discussion on this, but I came up with a few things that I do want to share. In the verse, it says that one follows things like bathing properly, following the different purificatory processes, not by force, but by free will. And in the purport, it's described that Krishna, of course, is the reservoir of all qualities, including free will. He can do as he pleases. And therefore, the jiva being part and parcel, the atomic Anu portion of Krishna also has that minute quality of free will. So all qualities that we find there in Krishna are also in the living entity. But this is a purport, Srila Prabhupada, 15.7. Lord Krishna clearly says, "My maya vangcho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana." All the living entities are part of me. Therefore, the living entities are qualitatively the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the leader, the supreme amongst all living entities. In the Vedas, it is said, "Nicho nichananam chaitanas chaitanam." What's the next line? "Ekyo eko yo vidadati kaman." Just remember that. Probably quoted that in my initiation letter. I should know that. The Lord is the chief individual living entity, the leader of all subordinate living entities. Because the living entities are parts or samples of God, their qualities are not different from those of the Supreme Lord. The living entities have the same qualities of the Lord, just as a drop of seawater is composed of the same chemicals as the sea itself. Thus, there is oneness in quality and difference in quantity. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by understanding the sample, the living entity, because all the qualities of God exist in minute quantity in the living entities. That's an interesting idea at the end, isn't it? In other words, we see all the qualities that living entities have, that Jiva has, and we understand that Krishna has all of those qualities, but in fullness, in completeness, without any, as Prabhupada would say, inebriation of material contamination. So the study of the jiva and the soul is quite interesting. I was fortunate to, when I was in India, you can't get them in America, but you know, a lot of Bhanu Swami's books, sometimes they find their way here, these translations of the scriptures, but I don't think they're here. But anyway, I bought quite cheaply in rupees, his translations of Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. So there's six books, the six different Sandarbhas, and they're very, very interesting. Most of them are completely beyond, you know, my intellectual comprehension, you know, because Jiva Goswami is just such a deep, deep scholar. And, you know, when he makes a philosophical point, he doesn't just make the point. He makes the point several times in several different ways. He quotes innumerable scriptures to support it. Then he takes all the opposing arguments from the impersonalists, and he deals with those are, and then he defeats all those arguments and gives some more. So, I mean, you know, absolutely thorough exploration of spiritual concepts. Anyway, I started reading the Paramatma Sandarbha because an interesting thing about it, while it describes Paramatma, most of the book describes the jiva, the Atma and Paramatma, right? So the first half of it, at least, you know, like 150 pages, is discussing the Atma, the jiva. And then it's then the jiva's relationship with Paramatma, relationship with Krishna. So Jiva Goswami talks about the eternal qualities of the Atma. It's very interesting. Who we are. What is the essence of the jiva? He talks about how each jiva is individual. Everyone is separate from each other. There's no merged consciousness, collective consciousness, you know. Each one has individuality eternally, a separate consciousness from all other jivas. And consciousness, of course, is very important. Consciousness is a quality that is inherent within the Atma. So consciousness, you know, we sometimes say the living is Sat Chit Ananda. Well, the Sat principle, the eternal principle, consciousness principle is always there. But it's not just consciousness, because you have Chit, knowledge, which means that the Atma is also self-conscious or self-aware. It's kind of an important point Jiva Goswami stresses, that not only is there consciousness, but there is awareness. In other words, we are the pure soul is aware of himself, of everything else around him, and all resultantly Krishna. So that awareness is there, and first of all, the awareness of the self is jiva, and in the material world, there's an awareness of all the objects in the material world. So our consciousness, our awareness, our knowledge, I'm looking over there, I'm seeing picnic tables, all that. Yes, the senses and gross and subtle body are involved, but ultimately the awareness is coming from the jiva. You know, when the jiva leaves the body, is there any awareness? No, Is there any consciousness? There's no sensory activity. Nothing is going on in a dead body. It is the presence of the soul that activates everything, that illuminates, that pervades the body, pervades the senses, and all that awareness and knowledge and everything is coming to the jiva. Bhagavad Gita verse kind of also talks about this, 13:34. O son of Bharata, as the sun alone illuminates all of this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So we see this consciousness as a hallmark of the presence of the soul. You know, like, how do we know there's a soul in the body? Because you're conscious. Because you're alive, basically. You know, you don't need any more proof of the presence of the soul than the fact that you're alive. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but, you know, that's the idea. Okay, so not only do we have consciousness, awareness, self-awareness, awareness of ourselves, awareness of others, awareness of our eternal situation, awareness of the situation of others, also an innate quality of the Atma is that we are an enjoyer and that we have desire. Jiva Goswami mentions these things. Desire is there as part of a living entity's eternal nature. And, of course, ultimately ananda, bliss or happiness. Sometimes he calls it happiness is there. It's part of our nature. There's happiness we experience in the material world in relationship to sense objects, but there's also the inherent happiness that is there for the jiva in the spiritual world, in spiritual relationship, particularly with Krishna. Krishna's a little bit of, tiny bit of happiness in terms of Brahman realization, but thousands of times more happiness in relationship with bhakti and Krishna consciousness. Now, one other important quality and point about the jiva is the jiva is also the doer or the cause of action and activity. The Sanskrit wasn't there, so I don't know what word Jiva Goswami uses. Someone might know better than I do. But the translation at least many, many times was called doer. Doer is what was mainly used. What is it? Contingent? Okay, but do you know what the Sanskrit would be for that?
Yes, satantri chamayata, satantrata. I was researching it. Contingent doer, what I have to speak from.
Well, what's the word for doer?
Karta.
I'm...
Karta?
Adi Karta is the first doer.
Karta, okay. There we go. So at any rate, you know, that word is being used. The translation at least was doer. I'll stay with English. I'm better at that. A little bit better. In some of the verses, a lot of verses were quoted, like from Brahma Sutra, it says, the pure jiva has the nature of the doer by his shakti, along with his senses. In other words, we are a shakti, tadashta shakti, nevertheless a shakti, an energy. So that means we're an energy of Krishna, coming from Krishna, but we also sort of have our own shakti, little shakti. Krishna, of course, has, you know, entire shakti, and we have a little shakti. So like this is like a carpenter. The jiva is the doer. And just as a carpenter uses the axe, the jiva is a doer using his shakti. The jiva is an agent. The word agent's interesting. Sometimes we talk about, especially in psychology like that, the word agentic. That one is, it's kind of like being a doer, I guess. The agent, in other words, you are sort of the source of your activity. Okay? Now, there's three states of action, Jiva Goswami mentioned. In the material world, the jiva is a doer through the body and senses. In Brahman realization, the doer is dormant. It's still there, because that's an eternal part of the nature of the jiva, but it's somewhat dormant. In the Brahman, if you're sitting there in the Brahman, you're not doing a lot, you know, which Prabhupada said is one of the problems. Because our nature is to be a doer, the living entity doesn't stay in Brahman, but comes back in the material world, and Prabhupada would say, and starts doing something like building hospitals, philanthropic work, and like that. In other words, that need for activity, for doing, is there because it is our nature. Okay. Oh, and in, of course, the pure stage, it says that one does or acts through inspiration from Paramatma. Okay? Now, we're mostly talking about living in the material world. I mean, you could say, well, in the spiritual world, if you're in Krishna Loka, isn't your inspiration coming more directly from Krishna? Okay, yes. But here, we're not, at this point, he's not distinguishing Krishna and Paramatma, because Paramatma is Krishna, a form of Krishna which we experience in this material world. I mean, in fact, you know, Mahavishnu and Paramatma, as of course, Shiradakshay Vishnu, is the cause of the whole material creation. Nothing happens here without the Vishnu expansions, without Paramatma. And particularly, nothing happens at all because the Prakriti is inert, does not have consciousness. It is only the injection of the living entity in relationship. It's complex, and I can't really describe it because I don't really understand it very well. But there's, you know, the relationship between the Jivatma and the Paramatma brings about the creation of this whole material creation. It's here for us. And why? Because of our desire. So we have desire, we're a doer, we are agentic. That implies that the Atma has volition or free will, which is the topic that we started with. That the living entity has eternally this free will nature. So our action in the pure jiva has activity in the spiritual world and the conditioned activities here in the material world. Jiva Goswami quotes this verse in Bhagavatam, so okay, this is actually Prabhupada's purport to 7.7.19 that Jiva Goswami quotes. Atma refers to the Supreme Lord or the living entity. Both of them are spiritual, free from birth and death, free from deterioration, and free from material contamination. They are individual, they are knowers of the external body, and they are the foundation or shelter of everything. So here we're talking about both Atma and Paramatma within the body. They are free from material change, they are self-illuminated, and they are the cause of all causes, and they are all-pervading. They have nothing to do with the material body, and therefore they are always uncovered. With these transcendental qualities, one who is actually learned must give up the illusory conception of life in which one thinks, I am this material body, and everything in relationship with this body is mine. So, this is our nature. We have this minute quality, the same features of Krishna, that we are individual, we are knowers, self-illuminated, described that the Atma is self-illuminated and illuminates the body. Bhagavad Gita verse 334 said that. So, unfortunately, as it's saying here, that one who has learned must give up the illusory conception of life. So what happens to the Atma? Unfortunately, somewhere along the way, and this is, of course, something that we probably don't fully understand, and, you know, there's different versions of this, but somehow or another, we have become covered by the modes of nature in contact with this material energy. When the pure living entity comes in contact with the modes of nature, our tendency is to become covered because we are tathashta shakti. And the Paramatma Sandarbha goes at great length to explain the difference between Atma and Paramatma in this regard. That we do not, because Paramatma, of course, is total, complete, Krishna, pure, we are small, and our nature is to become covered, tathashta. Prabhupada gives the example of the beach on the ocean. The tide is out, and you have dry land or in the sand. Some of you may have experienced this. The tide comes in, and pretty soon you're in the water there in your beach chair. So sometimes that portion of land is in land, and sometimes it's covered by water. Living entity is like that. That's what tathashta means, the tendency to become covered. Sometimes we are free, sometimes we are not conditioned and acting in relationship with Krishna, and other times we can become covered by material nature. So, Prabhupada talks about this process, how this happens. Purport to Bhagavad Gita 15.7. Every living entity is an individual soul, has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. Minute independence, there eternally in the living entity. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In his liberated state, he is free from material condition. He is under the engagement of transcendental service of the Lord. Conditioned life, he's dominated by the material modes of nature and forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. A few verses later, 5:15, Prabhupada explains more. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is anu, atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Very important. Prabhupada says we have the capacity to desire by our free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord. In other words, we have the capacity to desire and we have some realm of activity, but that cannot be completely fulfilled by ourselves, but by the Lord. When the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires, but the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. So in other words, that's the free will. That's the point where it is our desire that Krishna is fulfilling and allowing us basically to become covered by Maya. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with the circumstantial material body, that is, by some circumstance we've gotten this body, and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. So, because of some bad choices, we have come into this material world. And coming into this material world, the true position, all of those qualities of the jiva that I described earlier, the Jiva Goswami described, are covered to some degree. In other words, they're partially manifest because we see consciousness, we see life symptoms, you know, we see desire, we see symptoms of the soul, but many of the very, very high exalted qualities of the soul are covered. Prabhupada describes this as the throwing and covering potencies of Maya. Says the illusory, this is a Bhagavatam 2.9.34 purport. The illusory energy has two phases of existence, namely the covering influence and the throwing influence. By the throwing influence, the illusory energy throws the living entity into the darkness of ignorance, and by the covering influence, she covers the eyes of men with a poor fund of knowledge by the existence of the Supreme Person. It's interesting that in the Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami gives a little different, I don't know if it's a different words or if it's a different definition. He says that there's also two influences, the covering influence and the confusing influence. So he said, so we're covered to forget our real existence as pure spirit, soul, part and parcel, servant of Krishna, and then we could become confused by thinking, oh, this is our real place. This is me. This material body, the senses, this world, this is my place to enjoy, my place of happiness. So first we're covered of knowing who we really are, and then we're confused, you know, by this influence of Maya. So the position of the covered living entity is that we need to regain our true position of the Atma. We need to overcome these conditions of material nature, our attachment to the material body, senses, all of this world that we see, and realize who we really are, that true nature of the free, independent, but connected living entity, but connected with Krishna in eternal relationship of love and service. So the irony is that one has to surrender to become free. When one surrenders, one is liberated. Sounds like a paradox, doesn't it? We become liberated from the struggle of independently fighting with the modes of nature, being controlled and conditioned by material nature. Right now, we're not free. We're conditioned. We're in the grips of the material energy. At least I am. Many of you are probably much more liberated. But basically, the living entity is in the grips of material nature. So we're not free. We think we're free. We think that if I leave Krishna and all of that having to, you know, like surrender and all that, you know, bowing to God and all that, somehow, you know, we think, oh, I'm going to be free from being under control of the Supreme Person. Now, how crazy is that? I mean, it's a real bad idea because, first of all, it makes no sense. Krishna is the absolute Supreme Person of Godhead, the creator of everything, the maintainer of everything, everything happening by his will and direction. How are you going to act separately or differently or somehow or another convince ourselves that we are supreme and that we are the big doers and that we are in charge? So this is illusion. This is the unfortunate illusion of the living entity. So the real freedom is to become free from the material modes of nature and become aligned with Krishna's desire. Real freedom is to become free from material desires, free from the modes of nature, free from the entrapment of Maya, and free to become or realize who we really are, which is the eternal servant of Krishna. That is the position, that's Sanatana Dharma. That is the position where the living entity is happy. That's the source of our happiness, of our pleasure, of our enjoyment, not just that, but our contentment, our realization, full realization of who we are. You know, self-realization is used a lot, the term. But there's no realization of the self fully without realization of the self in relationship. And complete relationship means relationship with God, with Krishna. So the Atma has to realize it's subservient to Paramatma. And then the Atma takes direction from Paramatma. It's not just, oh, now I just surrender to Krishna and I'm still stuck here in the material world suffering, but somehow I'm surrendering. It's kind of like, I say here, you know, suffering, but somehow maybe I'll go to heaven. No, no. It's a very active process, a relationship. When the Atma turns to Krishna, you know, the old two birds in the tree, the enjoying the, you know, one is enjoying the fruits of the tree. There's the witness bird, the Paramatma is there waiting. And when we finally, the bird turns to Krishna, turns back to Paramatma, stops eating the fruit, slows down his material desires, what happens? The Paramatma gives realization to the living entity. First of all, realization of how to get out of the material world. The Paramatma directs the living entity who has that desire to the spiritual master, right? By the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna, but by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru. Or words to that effect. You know, I think I had it the other way around. But anyway, you get the idea. So the Paramatma directs you, the Jivatma, the Jiva, to the spiritual master, to begin the process of sadhana, the process of, again, worshiping the Lord. In other words, now, even in the early stages of sadhana bhakti, we are now acting in our constitutional position. We are acting as the jiva is meant to act, who we really are. That's all we're doing. The Prabhupada always says this is not an artificial imposition on the soul. It is an uncovering of the soul's real and natural position. So that's all we're doing. We're just you know, being real now by becoming devotees. We're acting as who we are. And that real freedom then comes by being free from material natures and understanding our relationship with God. Srila Prabhupada says in purport to Bhagavatam 3.13.39, the qualification of bhakti, or devotional service, is that the devotee should be free from all material contaminations and desires. This freedom is called vairagya, or renouncement of material desires. One who engages in devotional service to the Lord according to the regular principles is automatically freed from material desires, and that pure state of mind one can realize the personality of Godhead. So again, you know, Prabhupada sometimes referred to like the Raga principles as the principles of freedom, right? Four principles of freedom. In other words, as we become free from a material world, we are then material desires, material attachment, we are then free to act in our spiritual position. We got a great example from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.38. Suta Goswami said, thus addressing Vyasadeva, Srila Narada Muni took leave of him. This is after he kind of told his whole story of becoming a pure devotee. Vibrating on his Veena instrument, he left to wander at his free will. Returning to our theme here, Narada Muni is exhibiting complete free will. After he is totally surrendered to Krishna, after surrender, he's able to actually exhibit spiritual free will. Purport. Every living entity, every living being is anxious for full freedom because that is his transcendental nature. And this freedom is obtained only through the transcendental service of the Lord. Illusion by the external energy, everyone thinks he's free, but actually he's bound up by the laws of nature. A conditioned soul cannot freely move from one place to another, even on this earth, what to speak of from one planet to another. But a full-fledged free soul like Narada, always engaged in chanting the Lord's glory, is free to move not only on earth, but also in any part of the universe, as well as any part of the spiritual sky. We can just imagine the extent and unlimitedness of his freedom, which is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the association of the devotees is also free. One may be fortunate to have it, or one may not have it, even after thousands of endeavors. Therefore, in all spheres of devotional service, freedom is the main pivot. Without freedom, there's no execution of devotional service. Why? Because there's no love, right? In other words, we'd be like robots. You have to do devotional service or you'll be punished or you'll go to hell. Something. You know, that's not freedom. That's not love. So without freedom, there's no execution of devotional service. The freedom surrendered to the Lord does not mean the devotee becomes dependent in every respect. To surrender unto the Lord through the transparent medium of the spiritual master is to attain complete freedom of life. Okay? So, real simple, to summarize, to become free, surrender to Krishna. That's real freedom. Okay. Come on, Pranagavinda Prabhu. Please help correct or further illuminate.
Parent was in, he says, you don't see the value of free will? Oh. Then he says, like, you do not put a gun.
Say it again. Oh. Say it clearly.
Vidyananda Maharaj.
This is important.
Ask Prabhupada that, conversing. He says, okay. If there is no free will, then there would not be any suffering. All the problem, it's caused by, it seems like free will. Prabhupada said, you don't see the value of free will? Then he stopped and he turned towards him and says, like putting a gun on the head of a girl and says, you love me or I'll kill you.
Mm.
How the love and the killing, and the Prabhupada was making that point was so unique, and then everybody said, oh, there is a value of the free will.
Yeah.
Without free will, there is no love.
Right.
There's no meaning of life.
Thank you. Very, very important. That'd be a nice, if you find that or the source of that conversation, I'd like to get it. Maybe you send it to me.
If I heard correctly, when you were talking about what Jiva Goswami says about Atma and Paramatma, their qualities, so you're reading about some of the qualities together.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, one of them was their cause of all causes.
Okay, that was so said. Atma refers to Supreme Lord or the Living Entity, both of them, that one. Okay, free from material, they're individual knowers, they're foundations, they're free from material, they're self-illuminating. They're the cause of all causes and all pervading, yeah.
Could you elaborate on that?
I don't know. Okay, it's talking about the Supreme Lord and the Living, or the Living Entity. In other words, Atma can be used either way, and then Robert's saying both of them are spiritual, and et cetera, et cetera. I think most of this is pretty clear. It can be all, in other words, when you say all-pervading, the Atma is all-pervading of your own body, right? Where the Paramatma is all-pervading of everything in the universe. Cause of all causes? Not real clear on that one. That one seems... Yeah.
If one don't take these five causes, he's not intelligent. And says everything, I mean, you have Bhagavad Gita in front of you. If you look at that, Krishna says that everything should be considered with these five causes. So, daibhim as adhisthana tatha karta karanam cha pithaka vidam vividascha pithaka chesta daibhim iti panchamam. And Prabhupada translates that daibhim means the final sanction by Krishna. The soul desire, nature provides the facility, then other elements comes to facilitate, and then Krishna has to sanction. And then all these are called contingent doers. So soul is not really doer ultimately for everything, but he develops a desire. His desire is the root cause of this material world.
Okay, that's good. I think that's helpful, I think. In other words, And that is described many places, that how the living entity is the cause of this material world. In other words, without our desire, without us wanting to come to this material world, there would be no reason for this material world to energize, right? It was described how it's basically dull matter, the pradana is there, and then it's activated by the desire of the jiva. So I think that's what Prana Govinda was referring to, how we are the cause of this material manifestation. Not obviously, in all of these things, we could say we are small, all of these things, and Krishna is, you know, the ultimate, very large. Okay, good. But I'm a hun.
I was thinking the same way. Sometimes I would understand it to be part of the rasa tattva, as you're pointing out, the emphasis on free will, independence, and I think in my class I mentioned the eternal relationship. It's never really broken, so the cause of all causes is the relationship of Krishna and the living entity, their condition of the relationship. As you're pointing out, when you turn away, then there's also that cause of the building of the prison house.
I don't know why it just occurred to me, I'm not sure if it's exactly connected, but the word Jiva Goswami uses, or quotes from a verse about being a doer, one of the words he uses is lilaya, or something, you know, some form of lila. In other words, just as Krishna has his lilas, you know, which is activity and all of that, in a sense, the living entity also has, it's not lila like Krishna's lila, but in other words, we manifest our sphere of action and activity.
One other, something I noticed in the beginning when you were discussing the qualities of the jiva, how he illuminates and everything is under, that's his, I guess, the cheta. So one commentary on the Gayatri Mantra, the Savitur, which a lot of times you think the sun, was being used as, how do you really know, what is the light that you're understanding things with, the matter and the spirit, is the point of the consciousness.
Of illumination.
Yeah. So the Savitur. And then you also mentioned like the sun lights up everything. So the consciousness lights up everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really nice verse. The 1334 was talking about that the living entity through illuminates the entire body by consciousness.
So it kind of used that in as a Savitur in the first line of Gayatri. That's what's illuminating for you coming down so you can see.
Okay, so that's why the sun is mentioned first as the illumination. Right? There was a source illumination, then you can, I guess, understand the rest. Maybe. Okay, anything else? Yes, we got it. Oh, wait, you have to wait for the mic.
related to Madhumati's inquiry. In the Bhagavad Gita somewhere it says that the living entity is the cause of his own suffering and enjoyment in this world. So when we think about it, what is there outside of the suffering and enjoyment in this world?
Okay.
We're the cause of it.
Right. Here is a from our vast internet audience, which I'm sure is larger than our audience here today. Here, is this from Svaha? Mother Svaha. Okay. Oops. Says, can you convey this for the benefit of class? To cement the concepts of this nice class for those of us not reading the Paramabhasandarbha, can watch the YouTube seminar of Bhanuswami given on the Paramabhasandarbha in Melbourne. Aha. All right. I'm sure that Bhanuswami's class in the commentaries would be very, very good since he translated and studied this. Okay. Thank you very much, Mother Svaha. So something to check out, YouTube, Bhanuswami's classes in Melbourne on the Paramabhasandarbha. Thank you. Is there someone else? No. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.